Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Glad to have you all with us today for another show that is packed with more than we'll ever get a chance to talk about. My Monday and Friday partner, Jim Galloway of the AJC, is their lead political writer, sitting immediately to my left. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the Dead Tree edition of the paper. And, of course, he oversees the Political Insider blog at Politically Georgia. Thank you, Jim.
No, it's great to be here.
Yeah.
Crossover day is over and the sun is out.
Okay, there you go. Loretta Lepore, she is a Republican insider, political consultant. She was Governor Sonny Perdue's communications director. She ran Carly Fiorina's. She was co-chair of the Fiorina for President campaign in Georgia. And I suspect that we're going to have a chance to talk at some point when we get into the Trump tariffs a little later, Loretta, talk about how your former boss, Governor Perdue, might be feeling about what the impact of those tariffs could eventually be on agriculture now that he's Secretary of Agriculture.
Okay.
We'll get to that a little bit later. Dr. Andra Gillespie is with us today as well. She's a professor of political science at Emory University. It's been a while. I'm really glad you're back today. Thank you, Andra.
Glad to be back. Thank you.
And Buddy Darden is here with us, former Democratic congressman from Cobb County. He, since you were last on the show, you have moved to a new law firm. You're now at Pope McGlamory. Did I get that right?
You got it right. And instead of having 3,000 offices around the world, my new law firm has an office in Atlanta and one in Columbus, and it's called Pope McGlamory.
All right. Thank you. Well, buddy, we're glad you get a chance to mention the firm. let's get right into, a subject that we've, Jim, we've addressed it throughout this week. But the fact of the matter is, it is still a hot topic of conversation. And that's the Georgia legislature's decision, which they finally voted to lock into place to deny Delta Airlines a tax break of some $40+ million because of Delta's decision to sever itself from the NRA, at least in terms of one discount plan.
Right, and the measure is passed. The bill has been signed by Governor Deal. The issue is officially over, and yet this morning we hear from Ed Bastian, the Delta CEO, who in an email to employees said the airline had reacted to some statements that the NRA had made after the school massacre in Parkland, Florida, and that their values are not for sale.
So before we go into that, I do want to say that I got an email from a listener who did not I didn't ask him if I could use his name, so I won't without permission, who made what's a valid point. I have on a number of occasions talked about Delta cutting ties with the NRA. What they actually did in this case was they were offering a discount for NRA members going to an NRA convention.
Right.
They discontinued that discount.
And as it turns out, only 13 tickets had been purchased under that discount.
I thought it was a valid observation from the listener. So Ed Bastian said, among other things, this, and I want to throw it open for all of you. He wrote this memo to Delta employees. On Saturday, Delta rescinded a one-time group travel discount for the NRA's annual meeting, asked the organization to remove our name and logo from their website. This decision followed the NRA's controversial statements after the recent school shootings in Florida. And he goes on, I've heard from many of you over the last few days, our people and our customers have a wide range of views on how to increase safety in our schools and public places, and we are not taking sides. Our objective in removing any implied affiliation with the NRA was to remove Delta from this debate. He was critical of the state legislators, Jim, who did decide to tie the jet fuel exemption to the NRA decision. And he says it was not made for economic gain. Our values are not for sale, as you pointed out. But he did go on, and this is important, Jim, to say, nevertheless, Atlanta is our home, and basically we love it here. That was an interesting comment.
Right, right. Just to shut off talk that they might move in retaliation, and if you take a look at the AJC website, you'll find an op-ed piece from Casey Cagle, kind of trying to make peace, calling this a little squabble between family members, and he doesn't have any reason to believe that Delta is moving its headquarters.
So, Andre, let me go to you. It strikes me that Bastion would not make the statement about Atlanta and maintaining the home here unless he was completely convinced that this was over right now. In other words, he's not looking for leverage. He seems resigned to the fact that this is not going to be the year that they're going to get this tax break, even if there was some maneuvering to try to reinstate it.
Well, there are a lot of things that are actually really important to kind of keep in mind here. One, this is a relatively small matter, and I think he had to address, you know, people like Andrew Cuomo coming in and offering to, you know, move Delta to New York and to try to say that that's actually really impractical at this point. Before the NRA flap, there was the issue of Clayton County in particular being really upset about this tax, about this tax break, and in particular worried about how that was going to affect education for them in their particular county. And then now Bastion is having to, in some ways, maintain his position, but then also move towards saying that, hey, we're corporate and we're trying to be as apolitical as possible about this. So I think everybody's trying to play all sides, and I'm not quite sure anybody is going to come out of this looking, you know, particularly great. Everybody's going to have some dirt on their hands.
Well, I think, you know, one of the other considerations that he had and has is that he has a huge employee base here in Atlanta. And Delta, what we don't think about, because we always think about Delta as the hometown team, our airline, our home airline, he has employees and big sets of employees in other cities around the country. So Minneapolis, Salt Lake, where there are other major hubs. So he also has to speak to the employees here in Georgia to say, we're not going anywhere. Don't be worrying about your jobs. And that's a very practical thing. And I think that's also part of the reason probably why Mayor Bottoms came out this week to kind of reassure Delta that we want you to be here. We appreciate you being here because it is part of our whole community and the sustainability economically of our community.
So, Buddy, how does this we have Republicans, Cagle, Josh McCoon running for Secretary of State, Rick Jaspers running for Lieutenant Governor, virtually all the Republicans running for statewide office and some running for legislature have basically condemned Delta, said they wanted this tax cut removed. Is this going to be an election issue? How does this play in the midterms?
Well, I don't think there's a doubt that it was just an amateur political stunt, which I think is going to backfire in the long run, because in a situation like this, it's one thing to be involved in the bedroom, and it's one thing to be involved in the bathroom for the Republicans, but now they're going to get in the boardroom. And I think there's a lot of danger here, because what you're seeing is coming to light a fissure or a division between what I call the carry your gun to church Republicans and the Chamber of Commerce Republicans. So there's going to be some repercussions here. I'm not sure where it's going, but this thing is not over by any means.
I would say, Bill, as far as political repercussions, we may end up looking back and seeing this as the week that Casey Cagle won the Republican nomination for governor. And, you know, if Democrats are remain unlucky as they have been, you know, that means he'll be the next governor.
Because he jumped firmly on this.
And he jumped firmly in. He got plenty of exposure. I mean, I can't underestimate that appearance on Fox and Friends on the impact of that. Casey's problem going into the session was that social conservatives weren't really on board with him. They weren't enthusiastic about him. But with the adoption bill fight and with this thing, I think they're pretty far in control. Now, what I would say is if Amazon.com goes elsewhere, then we could have a kind of who lost Amazon debate in the general election.
Andre, that's what I was going to turn to you on, actually. But go ahead. We'll get into that in a minute.
So I was thinking the same thing, gain a governor, lose Amazon. So I think if it does end up being the who lost Amazon fight, that's a partisan fight. Because if Cagle hadn't said this stuff, Mike Williams certainly would have. And so he's clearly trying to get out ahead of that and to try to make sure that he protects his right flank. And so I understand that, but I think the question becomes, it's more of an ethical question, at what cost? Do you put politics ahead of everything so that it gets in the way of economic development and other types of things? And so what this does is that that actually then gives fodder to Democrats for the general election.
Yeah, that's right. So, okay, so Buddy Loretta, so let's say, so Amazon does another round of cuts. Atlanta's not included. Reporters at our place, at the AJC, all over town, are going to get to the bottom of why Amazon decided to drop a city which seemed a logical choice to be in at least the finals. And when somebody at Amazon says, well, you know, they had that NRA fight, that's terrible for Republican candidates statewide, especially when you talk about the Republican business community as opposed to the Republican guns to church community.
I don't think there's any doubt that the people are a lot smaller than we give them credit for being, and that's why I respectfully disagree with Jim's analysis and Dr. Gillespie's analysis, because I think when it comes to the end game, we're selling the people short. And there's some pretty good Republican candidates out there besides Casey Cagle, and I've heard some pretty intelligent statements out of several of them. So
I'm afraid I don't understand. Why are we selling the people short? Are you saying
I don't think the general public is going to go for what I call an amateur political stunt. I think they're a little more sophisticated than that, and I don't think they're just going to roll over and say, hey, Casey Cagle gave it to Delta on behalf of NRA, so as far as I'm concerned, he's our man.
I think in the Republican primary that Casey Cagle did himself some favors, obviously, to the right flank, as Andrea said, who wasn't necessarily embedded in his camp thus far. So he's earned points there and in aggregate with the adoption bill. I do think that at this point in time, you have, if the Republican Party was an homogenous group with groupthink, then perhaps that would carry through carry through to a sweep in the primary. I don't think Republicans are homogenous anymore. And in light of this decision, what's happened to the Capitol, when you get outside of the Gold Dome, you begin to hear the country club Republicans very concerned about this. You begin to hear the business community very concerned about this and what kind of projection this has for us as a state and being progressive. And I use that word loosely, progressive, not to imply political leanings, but to say that we're a state that's moving forward in a lot of different respects. So I don't think we're going to see all Republicans line up behind Casey Cagle and the fact that there are other Republicans in this race that are now getting second looks, right? There's several, they're getting second looks that may not have had that before. And then when you get into the general election, I think it becomes a whole different ballgame. Because there are going to be a lot of people in this election, and you can look at a number of different issues that are at play, whether it's the gun debate, whether it's the adoption debate, whatever the case may be, that people are not identifying as much by party. And in this election, maybe more than any in the general, we're going to start seeing some people cross over and voting for other candidates because they are not aligned philosophically or in practical terms with the candidate that's leading what would be their typical top of their ticket.
Jim, it's interesting. We said on the show on Monday that this comes down to what Delta's issue in some ways is that we call them our hometown airline, where they are subjected to the kind of pressures that they felt this week in losing their tax break over the NRA. And yet they're a major global player, too. When we look, and that's where they made their decision, was based on the global customer base that they have.
Sure.
But what we see around the country is that corporations are starting to line up very strongly against the NRA. With Kroger, with the stores that it owns that sell guns, said they're going to now set an age limit. Today, REI, which doesn't even sell guns, is going to discontinue buying product from an outdoor company that does business with the NRA. They buy their brands are like Camelback, which is a popular water hydration system, Bell bicycle helmets, and Giro, a ski a goggle manufacturer. So it's pretty powerful.
And I was John Meacham, the author, was on MSNBC this week, and they were talking about this movement, the corporate movement on guns, and he drew the parallel to Atlanta in the 1960s, when business saw that the government was not going to do anything, they're the ones who started. Who became kind of the social conscience?
Right. We're going to be the city too busy to hate.
Right, yeah. Right, and now you see. I mean, Dick's Sporting Good, Walmart. You know, an Arkansas-based company is making some moves. I just find that fascinating.
I think one of the things that Lieutenant Governor Cable should be aware of is, you know, I don't know. If everybody understood the way your listener understood sort of like what the ban was the discount, what the removal was all about. Because I'm assuming that everybody thought, like I did, that what it was that the NRA had this established relationship with Delta, like AARP. So they're kind of permanent discounts for all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Show your card, you know,
right.
you get into movies for, you know, $2 off. And so that's actually more consequential than this particular one. And so at the end of the day, if this gets spun as you threw a hissy fit over, like, you know, saving $20 on a plane ticket for one convention, then I think people would sort of ask, like, whether or not you know when to sort of use your powder versus hold your powder.
Good point. All right, we got to get to a break. Before we do, I'm going to go around. I said the other day, I say it again now, I hate to think about talking about politics with everything through the whether Amazon is coming to Atlanta or not lens, but in this case, it has some validity. Have we lost Amazon because of this, buddy?
It's too early to tell, but I'll say this. If you ever get to the point that you let a bunch of political thugs like the NRA start pushing you around, then that's a bad sign for corporate America and a bad sign to Amazon.
Loretta?
In my experience in economic development, corporations do not make decisions based on one set of criteria. So there are a whole host of criteria that they're looking at, and this is just one of many.
Andra?
I think they're looking at it. And so the fact that you actually added this fuel to the fire as this is being discussed, I don't think is particularly wise.
Jim?
I think that's yes. I think it matters. I think that's why Nathan Deal on Wednesday declared this fight over. He caved very quickly, and I think that was a move to get it off the table as quickly as possible.
As we go to a break, Jim, one point: the governor had an interesting way to try to spin this. He was candid. He said, "Well, this might not be great for Amazon, but he had a positive outlook too."
Yeah. We're a diverse state, even politically.
All right.
What would Loretta have done on that?
That's right, with Governor Perdue. All right, she doesn't want to answer that. We got to get to a break. You're listening to Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
You want thoughtful, responsive, open, and intelligent discussions. So GPB is proud to add an exciting new show to Middays. Starting Monday, March 5th, we bring you Joshua Johnson and 1A, the First Amendment. GPB is committed to bringing you diverse voices and viewpoints. Join us for smart conversations during Middays. Listen to 1A at 10 a.m., and we'll continue to bring you On Point at 11. Keep it tuned to GPB and stand with the facts.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. Before we get to our next topic, I just want to make a brief announcement. Starting Monday, when we go on the air, actually at 2:06, which is when we come out of the NPR news break, you're going to be able, should you want to listen to the show, but we're going to start putting the show up on Facebook Live. So if you want, you can watch it. Now, it's still a radio show. We are still going to be in a radio studio, and
we're going to look like we belong in a radio studio.
but we invite you, if you'd like to join us at the GPB News Facebook page. You know, go to that page on Monday, and at 2:06, all of a sudden, we're going to be hot on the Facebook page. I'm buying a couple new shirts, Jim.
Ties? Ties? No,
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 ties.
No, we don't need to go that far. All right. Buddy, let me start, if I can, with you on this. The state spent a reasonable amount of money a few years ago. It used to be that rallies at the state capitol were held on the front steps of the capitol. I think there was a decision at a certain point for a well, let me ask you, Jim, why did they decide they didn't want him on the front steps of the Capitol anymore?
Well, number one, it was a security issue. We also, at the time, remember that Tom Watson's statue was kind of standing in the way there.
Right.
That was moved. But, yeah, the idea is to get them. I mean, if you remember the Tea Party rallies back in 2009, I mean, they closed down Washington Street that runs right in front of the Capitol.
So the state appropriated a fair amount of money to build what is now called Liberty Plaza on the other side of the building. If you're driving north on Piedmont, you'll see the Capitol to your left. And right across the street, there's a big open area called Liberty Plaza. And so that's where a week and a half ago or so, this big anti-gun rally was held, right?
Yeah, it was larger than normal, just given that this was, I think, exactly a week after Parkland.
Okay, and the problem was that you couldn't hear the speakers. Why not?
Because the Georgia Building Authority says that they didn't put their request in on time, and they said, oh, it was strictly permitting.
Yeah,
but the outlets were working. That morning, they were specifically shut down.
Andra, it's called Liberty Plaza. It's a place, presumably, where people can come as citizens to express, and organizations can express their point of view. And the news reporting on this has it that the head of the GBA, the Georgia Building Authority, Steve Stansel, was the one who said, we don't want their microphones on. What do you make of that?
Well, some people are going to look at that as stifling free speech and maybe doing so based on technicalities. And so if they had the right to be there and they were properly permitted to congregate there, then if it's as much, and Jim can tell me, probably knows more than anything else, whether is this a matter of cutting on a switch?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, after a while, people are going to cry foul at that. And I think that that's pretty legitimate.
Or they're going to start bringing their own generators.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, and that would be my advice.
Megaphones.
Bring your own amp.
Go old school and just bring their own megaphones.
Well, what makes this different, though, Dr. Gillespie, is it's not a matter of cutting on a switch. What they did is when they found out the switches were still on, they went over there and manually cut off them and not permitting those people to park. By the way, this is the old legislative parking lot is where this Liberty Plaza is, and it was designed for this one purpose, is to keep all the traffic away from the Capitol and for safety and security to put everybody together. And this will, and the explanation that our friend Steve Stansel gave was lame at best. In fact, his explanation was even worse if he had not made an explanation, just said we didn't want to hear from him and we shut him down.
I think Buddy had his Wheaties today.
Well, yeah, but Loretta, but Loretta, it, you know, we're already living in this world in which respect for an opposing point of view is not particularly high. Is it not troubling if people who express a point of view that doesn't coincide with your view get a microphone turned off?
I was being somewhat.
I know you were.
Trying to inject some humor here to diffuse the tension. But, I candidly, look, the people protesting out there were mothers. And they were mothers who identified across party lines. You know, there were Republican women out there wearing T-shirts that expressed that they were moms and they were Republicans. And they were there to say that they wanted gun control safety, too. Or gun control or gun safety, too. So, you know, I think that this was an unforced error on behalf of the building authority. And, you know, in this country, we have a First Amendment and we have the right to free speech. And I understand that moms with a mission can be very powerful and can appear very fierce, but they were doing what was within their rights.
The Capitol folks are going to get a mulligan on this because, of course, we do have the school walkout on the 14th coming up. But on the 24th, which I think is a Saturday, there's going to be they're planning another very, very large rally here at the Capitol.
Yeah. Should we point out, I think, at the same time, we should, Jim, that this week on crossover day, the bump stock bill, the bill that would ban bump stocks in Georgia, that Mary Margaret Oliver had has been championing for quite a while now, failed to get the votes. It's gone. So the only gun, I think the only significant or maybe somewhat significant gun measure is now off the table.
Well, there is one out there that was passed by, I think, by the, was it passed by the House or by the Senate? I can't remember.
The House.
Which would Georgia has a system where it purges its roles of those with mental problems who are not permitted to buy weapons. Georgia purges that list every 5 years.
Yes.
And I think that was changed.
Okay. Let's move on to another issue. Andra, let me ask you about this. Josh McCoon, state senator from Columbus, running for Secretary of State, pushed a bill, passed it in the Senate. The voting hours, as we know, statewide are 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. The city of Atlanta chooses to keep its polls open until 8 o'clock at night. Josh McCoon sponsored a bill, which he says he did because he thought there needed to be uniformity, conformity of polling hours across the state to force Atlanta to close their polls at 7 p.m. What do you make of that?
So while I personally like Senator McCoon, I completely disagree with this bill. And I disagree with it in part because I'm in favor of and think we should move toward making voting as easy as possible. And this seems like a kind of a conscription of that as opposed to an expansion of making it accessible and easy to vote. So Atlanta, so they're taking advantage of the fact that states can tell cities what to do. And so this hadn't been stated before. Atlanta chose to make its own rules. And then now you have the states kind of coming in and now laying on additional regulations. But it's done in part because traffic is horrible here and trying to get people home, you know, could be particularly bad. And that might prevent people from being able to vote. What I would have said was that I'm sympathetic to the whole uniformity of rules argument so that people aren't confused based on localities. But why not expand voting hours until 8 o'clock everywhere?
There you go.
That would be the better thing. By restricting it back, then you're actually taking this away, taking sort of this privilege away from some people that should be extended to everybody, and you're doing it in a democratic state, and you're doing it in a place where you know traffic is horrible.
Democratic state,
and just keep in mind that Hillary Clinton got 80% of the city of Atlanta vote in 2016.
So voter suppression is the rallying cry that the opponents of this bill have thrown out.
Well, I'm not saying it's the motivation, but it's you're definitely removing Democratic votes from the game.
Laura,
I'll say it's a motivation. If we're having trouble finding somebody to say it is, I have no problem at all saying it's that motivation, because anytime you can cut down votes from the other side, of course, that's the way the game is played. And it's pretty evident to me this is what we call invidious discrimination.
Loretta, it is worth pointing out that, as we said before, McCoon's running for Secretary of State. He's obviously a Republican. Votes in the city of Atlanta are going to weigh heavily in any race for statewide office, including his.
Right. And in many cases, the statewide races can't get called until the votes in the city and in Fulton County come in, and they're notoriously late for coming in. Everybody would like to see those results come in much earlier in the evening.
But isn't that a problem in cities in major states around the country? Don't we see that as a pattern in a Pennsylvania, in Illinois, that major cities, they have more voters, they have more people to count? It isn't as if that's a Georgia problem exclusively.
Well, I think that the situation in Fulton County tends to be exacerbated beyond what the norm is.
Fair enough.
And I think the people that live in Fulton County and all those races that have even a fraction of their district within Fulton County are the ones sitting out there waiting well past midnight to get those results in. Now, that problem can be rectified within Fulton County. That doesn't have to be statewide. It can be rectified. But it is an issue in this proximity.
My point, Andre, though, is McCoon's not likely to get a whole lot of votes from voters in the city of Atlanta who tend to vote Democratic. And if they have an hour, were to have an hour less to vote, that means not as many votes tallied against him, perhaps.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and I don't want to sort of minimize what, you know, kinds of motives might be behind this particular move, but it's just the question of kind of the spirit of it. So, and one of the things that I would be looking for in a Secretary of State candidate is somebody who is going to try to make the voting process as efficient and as accessible as possible, and this isn't accessible, and that just has to be acknowledged, that if you really did care about making sure that everybody has their say, you would be talking about extending voting hours an hour everywhere. And as somebody who has to stay up on election night to watch these things, yeah, it's annoying, but I'm okay staying up an extra hour if it makes sure that as many people get a chance to vote as possible.
Yes, but also let's not forget that we have weeks of early voting, weeks of early voting. And oftentimes, you know, unless there's a big presidential election or a big, I'm assuming this fall we'll probably have pretty good early voter turnout because we have a governor's race and all the statewide office holders are going to be up for reelection. So we'll probably have a more significant early voting turnout. But oftentimes in a lot of elections and primaries, those polls are open and nobody's voting. So access to voting, you know, is available.
Jim, is this going to end up on the governor's desk for signature, or is it not likely to get to him?
I'm not sure.
Hard to tell, isn't it?
It's hard to tell, in part because up until this past session, Josh McCoon hasn't really been a favorite son in the House. There's still anger there for him for an initial round of ethics reform that he pushed through.
Yeah. And you have a couple of members of the House running for the same office.
Yes, exactly.
I'll make a prediction here, and that is it'll never see the governor's desk because the governor does not want to deal with this, and he doesn't want to be remembered as someone who took an action to restrict or suppress voting.
All right, let's take another break. When we come back, there's an awful lot of news coming out of Washington and a good deal of it that has the potential to be impactful here in Georgia. So let's get our final break of the show out of the way. This is Political Rewind.
Have a headache? How about taking a red-hot iron to your forehead? That was the cure back in ancient Greece. I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, we'll talk about the quack medical cures of earlier times and some things we do today that might make our descendants cringe. Plus, researchers breed a grain that can produce three times as many seeds. All on Science Friday from PRI.
Today at 3 on GPB.
We're back at the table with us today, Loretta Lepore, Dr. Andre Gillespie, Buddy Darden, and of course, Jim Galloway is here. Jim, the president kind of flabbergasted a great many people day before yesterday.
Twice,
yes. First on guns day before that, and then more recently, and we'll get to guns in a minute. But without apparently telling many people in advance and having been warned by people like his economic advisor, Gary Cohn, not to go there, the president kind of offhandedly said, yeah, we're going to have tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. And somebody said, well, how much? Well, 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum. He sounded a little bit like he was improvising, but it's had a huge, it's caused an avalanche of controversy and problems with the market.
Right, right. Yeah, the market's down, except unless you own stock in a steel or aluminum company. I would guess that if you were invested in Budweiser, maybe you realize that your cans are going to take a hit. In Georgia here, I mean, the problem is with a trade war like Trump is verbally picking. I mean, he's calling it that. Is that we're kind of the second line of we're in the retaliatory sector. We are a leading exporter of poultry to China. I think maybe that may be our biggest market. Soybeans also go to China, and if China were to retaliate and slap tariffs on it, then our businesses are going to suffer here, and I think people like Sonny Perdue know it.
Yeah, Loretta, that's why at the beginning of the show I said I wonder what your former boss, the former governor of Georgia, Sonny Perdue, now our ag secretary, must be thinking about all this. He's tried to warn President Trump on a few occasions from taking actions that he felt would be harmful to farmers around the country, and this isn't helpful.
I suspect he's probably having private conversations with the president to, help him better understand the implications for the ag sector. As Jim points out, we see it two ways, import and export here. So we have, agriculture is our number one industry in this state. We're shipping a whole lot of goods and services abroad, but we have the second fastest growing port in the nation. And so we're also importing a lot of things. So a trade war could impact us in more ways than one. So I think that Secretary Perdue is probably being verbal, but in a very productive fashion behind the scenes.
Look, Andre, part of this, too, is this notion of making policy what appears to be on the fly, without a lot of forethought, without the kind of conversations and policy discussions that normally go into these things. But what's interesting about this to me, too, is at a time when we're worried about America's place in the world, at a time when globalization seems to be breaking down, in part because of what the Trump administration is doing, a trade war like this just further destabilizes those social contracts, if nothing else, that we have across the world. I went rushing to Wikipedia this morning to remember the impact that Smoot-Hawley, mm-hmm. which was the 1930 tariff bill that passed into law, had. And while there are some people who think it was played a role in causing the Depression, many economists say it didn't do that. But it certainly at a crucial time when Germany was rising as a power, pulled the United States out of a position to have an impact on the rest of the world and what might happen with Germany.
So I wasn't thinking about the geopolitical part of it, but I went back to my AP U.S. history and was wondering what President Trump was doing in his history class, and thinking about Smoot-Hawley and about the idea of protectionism actually ends up not protecting people. And I think, part of the reason why he did this, well, it's on the fly because everything that he does is on the fly. And then there's the procedural issue of making this kind of announcement without giving anybody any advance warning so that they couldn't prepare. So then all of a sudden they have to defend this on the fly.
Or any details either.
Well, and that's the usual everything is vague mm-hmm. part of it. But he's keeping a campaign promise. So in that respect, I'm not surprised. So he is sending out red meat to people where he said he was going to sort of protect jobs. And I think the calculation is that by keeping promises, President Trump doesn't allow himself to evolve and doesn't allow himself to learn on the job. And this is a problem because, if he protects the steel industry here and he saves a couple hundred thousand jobs, I think the bigger question is how many millions of jobs does this affect? And the same base of people who's going to vote for you for a whole host of other reasons, how are they going to feel when their Budweiser goes up?
It'll be
good luck with that one. So,
like it or not, we're in a global economy, and a global economy is bigger than any country. And regardless of what this president does here in the United States or what is happening in China, the forces of the economy, I think, will govern it before it's over. And I'm not sure that this will ever go into effect.
He was, I will tell you what, this morning the Wall Street Journal greeted him with the toughest editorial we've seen on Trump since he took office. Just called it, what was the phrase? I think just the greatest blunder of his administration. And to Andrea's point, it noted that the millions of people who are employed by companies that use steel to make things, whereas maybe about 14,000 workers are involved now in the steel business creating in the creation of steel.
I grew up, I've said this too many times, I grew up in Chicago. I used to travel on the tollway from Chicago to New York. I remember when Gary, Indiana was, for a young kid, to drive past Gary was really a marvel. All the steel mills in full force, the flames belching out of the smokestacks, they're dead. Gary hasn't been a steel city in decades. And the president's notion that somehow this is going to help revive an industry that is not coming back is what's really peculiar about this.
But, it's part of a narrative that he's created about nostalgia. So you bring back these old manufacturing industries that aren't going to come back because the world has changed and technology has changed and our economy has changed. But it also sort of fits back into sort of, you know, the coded racial language and all of those narratives. So he's creating this image of nostalgia and saying we could get back to that to feed into people's anxieties. And this is a way to allay it as opposed to bringing people along and trying to bring people into the 21st century. So in that respect, he's leading. But I would argue that he's leading backwards and not necessarily leading forward, and that there are dire consequences and that it destabilizes our economy and it destabilizes our institutions.
Let me, before Loretta, I want to give you a chance, but Tom Faust just sent me a breaking story. The European Union is weighing potential tariffs on U.S. goods ranging from Levi's jeans to Harley-Davidson motorcycles and Kentucky bourbon. The proposed tariffs are a response to President Trump's Thursday announcement. We will put tariffs on Harley-Davidson, on bourbon, and on blue jeans, and Levi's, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker said on German television, according to a writer. So there you go.
It looks who makes, where is bourbon made?
Yeah, I mean,
it's made in Kentucky. Who represents Kentucky?
Yeah, Mitch McConnell's proud state.
Right. Well, there haven't really been any voices of support for this initiative.
Yes.
Other than, you know, the unions that represent the workers, the steel workers. And, you know, they are lauding the president for making good on a campaign promise. But I think to Andrea's point, if you look at where we are in a global economy, if you look at isolationism is not a solution for these folks either, as Ben said. Sass pointed out and got shot down by the White House yesterday, Senator Ben Sass. You know, there are other ways in this economy to help those folks that are part of an industry that is in decline, and that is through retraining, skills training, preparing them for the next generation and waves of jobs. And so that's where the president could still make good on a promise, but in a way that will carry forward into the future.
Good. Couple quick notes. First of all, we should say that Tom Faust just pointed out to me that not only is bourbon Mitch McConnell territory, Harley-Davidson is Paul Ryan territory. It's Wisconsin. So very interesting, the targets for these tariffs. Here's what Johnny Isaacson said in his statement about this. American manufacturing is expanding at its fastest pace since 2004, but this proposed tax would slam the brakes on the pro-growth, pro-jobs agenda that Congress and the president have been fighting for. Georgia has made great strides in attracting manufacturing jobs and building our workforce to meet that new demand. These tariffs are not only a new tax on American consumers, but also an impediment to economic growth. So here again, buddy, is another example in which we have one of our members of the United States Senate, Johnny Isaacson, responding with some criticism of the president's decisions, and the other, Senator David Perdue, who has become one of his closest advisors, it appears, silent on the matter.
I think we can discount Senator Perdue because he's just a sycophant for whatever the White House wants to say. However, this is a pretty strong statement for
Johnny
Isaacson.
Coming from the Democrat, Buddy Darden,
This is a pretty strong statement for Senator Isaacson because he has been very reluctant, as you know, to be critical of the administration while he hasn't bought in or embraced them. At the same time, he's shown a lot of restraint at times, but for Johnny Isaacson, for Senator Isaacson, this is a very strong statement.
If I could speak up just slightly for David Perdue here.
We're all about comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y on this show.
He is working with President Trump on immigration, which might explain why he doesn't want to condemn the man on tariffs.
However, I mean, given Senator Perdue's business experience, and given the fact that he, you know, has led manufacturing outfits, this is something he needs to speak up on because it's clearly something he knows about.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of bifurcated on that, right? Because he represents Georgia, which, again, our industry is ag. And so he has a constituency to serve. And so I think at some point he is going to have to speak up on this. He's going to have some kind of comment that, because I think the anxiety level among the ag community is going to be growing. So Secretary, you know, Perdue, while he's probably trying to weigh in and inform on the executive level, he's got a big job right now in dealing with the ag community, which is probably, you know, at the height of anxiety about this whole situation.
Okay, so I want to acknowledge my ignorance on what I'm about to ask. And for listeners who say that without saying but talking about my ignorance, I display it on many occasions on this show. Let me ask, can the president, what mechanism does the president have for instituting these tariffs? Don't these have to be, this isn't a unilateral decision. Can he do this by executive order?
Yes, he can do it by executive order. He can make certain declarations and certain findings and for a certain period of time impose these. Now,
because, I mean, Smoot-Hawley was a legislative action.
And what he would be acting under a provision where which makes the economics of the matter a case of national security.
Okay. All right. Fine. So Congress, which has not supported him on this, may at least temporarily have no ability to counter what he wants to do, is what we're saying, buddy.
That is correct. He has the authority under the existing laws to make certain findings related to national security and other matters that would allow him to do it. Now, it's not permanent. However, it would eventually, as I understand, have to be renewed by Congress.
All right. The other area where we watched the president with some amazement this week, Loretta, was in his bipartisan meeting with some congressional leaders to talk about gun security measures, in which the president seemed to embrace positions on gun control that were further to the left than many Democrats have suggested, including the notion of confiscating weapons from people who are determined to have mental illness without due process. Let's just get the guns out of their hands. And this was such a remarkable performance that Breitbart almost immediately, Steve Bannon's old website, almost immediately attacked the president as a guy who has gone over to the other side on gun control. And yet, we're not seeing anything come out of the White House that is in accord, any legislation that supports some of what the president said. What is going on here?
Well, I mean, I know I've seen other conservative commentators that also spoke to that effect. Laura Ingraham had a similar comment, you know, to the fact that the Democrats must have had the president's ear before that meeting. And I think what we're seeing, you know, as the lawmakers left and went back to the Hill, then they began speaking and saying, yeah, no, not so much. We're not doing that. And I think across the board for some of the measures that he was endorsing or asking to move forward that were pending, some bipartisan, you know, offerings that hadn't passed previously, you know, he was thinking could be run through again and perhaps would have more traction now. Even those don't have the votes at this point to get through for tighter gun safety measures, whether it's background checks, whether it's, you know, the bump stock, which doesn't have to go through Congress, that can be done at the executive level and is under review. It's currently under open comment period with the Justice Department. I heard that they had 70,000 people comment on that at the Justice Department, just to kind of show how fervent that is for a topic that people didn't know about prior to Nevada. There's now 70,000 people, wow, Americans, weighing in on that particular topic. But right before I came in here, Mitch McConnell said that he's not taking up gun legislation next. Right. He's taking up banking. So he shelved it.
Yep.
Right. If I could take us back just a little bit in the conversation, I got a note from my friend Robert Williams. He's the editor and publisher of the Blackshear Times down on the Georgia coast. And he's saying if the Tea Party crowd had been treated like those mothers and others in Liberty Park, Liberty Plaza, where the sound was shut off, the outrage would have spread like wildfire for days. He thinks the GBA chief should be fired, but he's probably going to get a pat on the back instead.
All right. Well, nice to hear from one of our listeners down there in South Georgia. But Jim, are we going to see any kind of legislation come out of this Congress? Bill seems to be the only thing that people may agree on, but that doesn't seem to be moving anywhere. As Loretta said, the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, isn't taking up guns anytime soon.
And I think that's why you're not seeing the roof fall in over Trump's comments on banning assault weapons or boosting up background checks is because his mind is already changing. Nothing is going to pass through Congress unless you have a president who is dedicated to pushing a specific set of new material through.
Bill, don't you recall that the NRA representatives paid him a little visit the other night and kind of a little mafia-like meeting, and all of a sudden, he has kind of changed his mind.
Why was it a mafia-like meeting?
Because that's what they do. What the mafia does, they pay you a little visit, and all of a sudden, you kind of change your mind.
What'd they say? You got a nice White House here?
Be ashamed
if anything happened to it?
Andra?
Well, I mean, I was going to go along with Congressman Darden on this. The idea that he makes all of these statements, and it's actually really funny. Now that we've seen a couple of these town hall meetings kind of within the White House, he runs them like a focus group. And so he's kind of acting like a focus group moderator, seeing where it is in the room. But then it's like he doesn't know how to write the report at the end, which if you do that on a professional basis, you have to synthesize everything and then put it all together. So I'm going to use some jargon from political science and sociology. So he's ideologically unconstrained, which means he's all over the place. And then he doesn't know from a methodological standpoint how to use grounded theory, which is how to find common threads through things. And it's a part because he's ideologically unconstrained because he doesn't know what he thinks. And the idea that he could come and make those very liberal pronouncements about gun control, meet with the NRA, have the NRA then come out and issue a tweet saying, don't worry, members, he's all for the Second Amendment, and then for there to be no clarification is part of the reason why Congress isn't going to do anything, because the Republicans are waiting to try to figure out what he'll sign. But what I would encourage the leadership in both the House and the Senate to do is, look, come up with something. I know it's going to be really, really hard to come up with something that's veto-proof, but look, come up with something and forget about him at this point, because this is how he's going to operate for the rest of his term in office. And after a while, people are going to just have to stand up and do something on their own, because this is the reason why business is coming in, because they can't rely on government to do anything, because the Republicans in Congress are too busy trying to figure out what this erratic president's going to do, and that's impossible.
You made a point that it really fascinates me. Business and government, a Republican-controlled government, are moving away from each other at this point rather rapidly, and that's really a fascinating thing to watch unfold.
Well, the business community, when you look at like the U.S. Chamber, where they are on this, I mean, on the aluminum and steel tariff, I mean, they are so far apart from Trump on that, it's not even funny. I mean, they're actually going to start lobbying against him, and that's fairly non-traditional to see a large business group lobbying against a Republican president.
Yeah, in fact, I would say not the guns, but I think the tariff issue is something that could produce a primary challenger to Donald Trump.
Look, when you've got some of his closest supporters saying this time he's made a really bad decision, you know there's something going on there. We're out of time. By the way, you know who was not invited to that meeting? Marco Rubio, the Republican senator from Florida, was invited. You know who wasn't? The Democratic senator from Florida, where the shootings took place. Bill Nelson was not brought into the room, which is just interesting in and of itself. All right, we're completely out of time. Andra Gillespie, Buddy Darden, Loretta Lepore, Jim Galloway, thank you for a great show today. Again, starting Monday, if you watch us, if you listen to us on the radio, you can also watch us on Facebook Live at GPB News Facebook page. And you can always download and subscribe to our podcast, Political Rewind. If you don't hear the show on Mondays and Wednesdays, there's always ways to be able to listen or watch Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Have a great weekend. See you next week.